I could serve my husband and keep a spotless house and always cook the dinners and go to the grocery shopping and do all those acts of service. But he will never feel it as love unless I stop, talk to him, and make sure that we're touching and we're intimate. Gary Chapman calls them love arrows. I'll be shooting those love arrows of acts of service. I'm shooting my love arrows at him, but is it completely missing him? Because his love language is quality time. The key to making your partner feel loved is understanding what they need and then doing that.
This is A Joyful Rebellion, the podcast that explores that moment you realize the life and success you worked so hard to create didn't come with all the fulfillment you thought it would. I'm your host, James Walters, and I want you to be the author of your own story. Each week, I connect with people who inspire bold answers to the question, what do I do now to create a life I love? If you are ready to start answering that question for yourself, you're in the right place. So let's start A Joyful Rebellion. Our relationships are a huge part of living our best life. So much so that the very first episode of A Joyful Rebellion featured a guest who helps people find their forever person. And today's guest builds on that theme, and this episode is for all of you married folks. Teresa DeWitt is a relationship coach at joyfullymarried.com and author of the book, Less Conflict, More Joy. And side note, if you're not looking for more joy in your life, please message me directly so I can flood your inbox with videos of baby chipmunks. That works for me anyway. Your mileage may vary, but back to today's episode, where Teresa and I discuss her practical tips for making a great relationship even better, turning conflict into connection, and we also talk about how to recover if you realize your relationship has hit a plateau or even a slump. This episode is packed with info you can take action on today to see big changes in your love life with your significant other. So let's jump right in. Teresa DeWitt, thank you so much for joining our Joyful Rebellion. I'm so glad to have you here. And your website is Joyfully Married. So when I saw that, I looked at it and thought, okay, this is someone I want to talk to. I've talked to people about relationships on the show before, but those were people who helped others get the relationships or meet the person they were going to have the relationship with. I wanted to talk to you about sustaining a great relationship or taking maybe a long-term relationship someone is currently in and making it better than it is right now. The core of the podcast is about when a person realizes they've put up with complacency in some area of their life. The podcast hopes to answer the question, well, what do you do next? And that's where the whole concept of the Joyful Rebellion comes in. Well, you know, why not be bold about it? Why not really go for it? I'd love to talk with you about if someone is in a long-term relationship and they find themselves in that place of complacency with their partner, what their routines are, just all the things. Or actually, if it leads to conflict, then you have a lot to say about that. You wrote a book. It's called Less Conflict, More Joy, which I love the title. What inspired you to write that book?
I think a lot of us take our mess and we can make it our message. Mm. And that's kind of what happened with me. My first marriage was a mess. It truly was. And because of that, I spent a lot of time just digging in, like, how can I fix my marriage? What can I do? And it turned out I wasn't able to fix that. Mm. It was too little, too late. It was possibly mental illness issues, you know, not diagnosed. Mm. I don't really want to put labels on it. I just want to say that it didn't work. Mm. So going into my next marriage, I'm like, I'm going to make sure this works. And so again, I took a lot of the stuff that I learned. I was reading tons of books. I went to classes. I went to listen to anybody who talked about marriage or relationships at our church. I counseled with pastors. I just did all the stuff. And I did a lot of inner work. It's like I basically got my PhD in relationships just because I had to dig in and figure out how do I make this work? Because I am not getting divorced a second time. Oh, no, yeah. We're not doing that. So we've been married. The first one is 16 years. This one's 15. So I've had quite a bit of years under my belt, so to speak. And I do know that there are certain things that can take you either down the road toward a really connected and happy and wonderful and deep and vibrant relationship or contented, then also take you down the road to disconnect and not talking and more conflict. And there are ways to bridge that gap to get you back from that disconnect and no relationship and acting like roommates, not having really a vibrant relationship, to getting back to that loving, deep personal relationship.
That's what I want to dig into today, because someone listening right now is yearning for that. Maybe they had that at one time in their current relationship, but they've sort of been longing for it for a little while. So I want to talk directly to that person and want to help them turn things around.
That's what I do. That's what I do in my book, Less Conflict, More Joy. You ask the question, what led me to write it? Well, I initially did it because we have 5 kids. They're all marrying age. They're all in their 20s. One's 30. And they're all in relationships, but none of them are married. So I thought, why don't I do something that can make a difference in their lives? So I started with it kind of a how-to manual of how to have a great relationship. And that started as a little tiny booklet. I'm like, here you go, I wrote this book. And from there, I created an online course, and then I wrote the full book. Now, the full book really can take either a new person in a relationship into to make the, help them not make the mistakes that are easy to fall into. Or it can also take someone who's been in a relationship who may have made those mistakes and help them turn it around. In Less Conflict, More Joy, I have a lot of really practical things that a person can learn today. They can apply it tonight and have a better marriage tomorrow. I talk a lot about physical touch, because roommates don't hug and touch. Lovers do. And I think that that's one of the first things to go when we start stepping back from our relationship. We stop touching each other. We stop being intentional with our touch. We stop wanting to touch each other. And that touch is so important. Touch is a huge part of the difference between roommates and marriage, a relationship, something long-term, something that's intimate. So I encourage people that are not connected in their marriage or in a relationship to start touching more. Start with hugs. When we're busy, we get busy with the kids, we get busy with our careers, we get busy with our lives, and we start separating. And those hugs help bring us together. The hugs give you all those lovely feel-good hormones. It also decreases the amount of stress hormones. And the longer the hug, the better. So if you can start at 5 seconds and take it to 10, take it to 15, when you get like to 20 seconds, there's something that snaps in your brain. And it actually releases that dopamine, makes you just relax. All of a sudden you feel safe, you feel loved, you feel connected, and it all happens during a hug. And that isn't just for a relationship you have with their partner. It could be a relationship with one of your children or a sibling, somebody that you want to deeply connect with on a regular basis or more often or again. Start with those hugs, and then little touches throughout the day, like a tap on the shoulder, a hand on the arm, a scratch on the back. Little things like that can help your partner know that I still value you. I still love you. And those are things that you do that are very nonverbal.
That's a good starting point. So if someone's thinking to themselves now the difference between their relationship and roommate status, that would be the first place to start, it sounds like.
It's safe. If you really developed into that roommate status, maybe you don't even sleep in the same bed anymore. Maybe you rarely have any intimate time together. Hugs are a great way to start. Another thing is learning how to ask really good questions. We tend to be very self-absorbed in our culture as human beings. We tend to be, it's all about me, what's in it for me, it's all about me. If you learn to ask those good questions of your partner on a daily basis, and then remember the answers and follow up the next day. For instance, instead of just saying, so how was work? And you get that empty, oh, it was fine. Say, what was the most challenging thing for you at work today? Or what really went well today at work? Can you tell me more? And they start to tell you a little bit and tell me a little bit more about that part. Just keep on asking those questions. It's going to feel weird at first, but taking time to have those conversations, that quality time. And in my book, Less Conflict, More Joy, again, I also have a chapter about the 5 love languages. Physical touch is one of them. Quality time is another. Some people are really, they feel loved when their partner spends quality time with them. Some people feel loved when their partner has physical touch with them. And some people need that to feel loved. We can talk about that more in a minute.
Yeah.
5 love languages is pretty great. And I'm actually going to go hear Gary Chapman I'm super excited because he's just learned from the masters, so to speak, of that whole idea.
Yeah, I would love to dig into that more because that's something I think is on a lot of people's consciousness now. I hear it talked about a lot more than I did 10 years ago when I probably read the book like 15 years ago. It's been around for quite a while. So if someone is trying to use that as kind of a guidepost for if they're in a relationship now, I distinctly remember when I read the book, I thought I knew what my 2 out of the 5, they say you really have 2 that are predominant out of the 5. And I thought I knew what those were. And then I hit my 40s and they weren't the same anymore. And I don't know if that's a guy thing, a testosterone thing. For me personally, I would have told you in my 20s, oh yeah, it's physical touch and it's quality time. Then more and more, it was acts of service, quality time. Don't know if that's just me mellowing out, what the heck that was, but it feels like a transition. Do you find people have that happen as they go through different seasons of life?
I think we all change. You know, they say our taste buds change every 7 years. I think our emotions, our emotional makeup, who we become, we're all constantly in a transition. You know, the person that you met and are dating or married is not the same person next year or the year after 5 years or 10 years. We all continue to change. I know my husband's watched me go through a lot of stuff in the last couple of years, and it's okay. I mean, we do, and it's good to reevaluate. What do I really need from this relationship? When you understand the 5 love languages, again, that's Gary Chapman's work, not mine, but when you understand them, that it's physical touch, it's acts of service, it's words of affirmation, gift giving, quality time. So those are the 5. And when you understand your makeup, what you need to feel loved, you can ask for it. For me, acts of service, and well, for me, it's mostly acts of service, but all I want is that words of affirmation as a response. Just tell me I did a good job. Right. Just notice that I did that thing, and I'm gonna feel happy and fulfilled. But my husband is completely opposite. He is quality time and physical touch. Hmm. So I need to slow down my acts of service and spend some time talking to him for him to feel loved. The key to making your partner feel loved is understanding what they need and then doing that.
Yeah.
I could serve my husband and keep a spotless house every day and always cook the dinners and always go to the grocery shopping and do all those things, all those acts of service. But he will never feel it as love unless I stop, talk to him, and make sure that we're touching and we're intimate. Gary Chapman calls them love arrows. I'll be shooting those love arrows of acts of service. I might say, hey, baby, good job at work. I'm shooting my love arrows at him, but they're completely missing him because his love language is quality time. So when he stops, when he comes into like my office here, we both have an office in our house here. And when he comes into my office, I need to stop what I'm doing, pay attention to what he has to say, and try to ignore whatever's on my desk that I was in the middle of, you know, because that's his way of showing me love. He shows it to me in quality time. Mm-hmm. He's learning to show it to me by doing things for me or with me as an acts of service person. I love it when, and I'm kind of jumping into another subject here. Feel free to interrupt if you need, but we hit both of our needs when we cook together, for instance, because me, it's an acts of service, doing. For him, while we cook, we talk. Mm-hmm. So we get that quality time and the doing, and that hits both of our needs for love. So if you have competing love languages, you need to figure out how to make them work together. There are ways.
Like you said, with the cooking, find something that takes care of both. So that could be a hike or something that you mutually enjoy that can kind of combine both of the things. That would be pretty cool. You could hold hands while you're walking around the lake or wherever you're walking. So you could definitely do that.
Maybe you're at church and you hold hands or what, you know, those kind of things, that physical touch. You're driving in the car, and I coach women who are having difficult relationships. Mm-hmm. And I had coached one of my girls. Her husband was going through some medical issues and they were going to one of his appointments together. And we had talked and she goes, I feel really distant from him. And I said, what are his love languages? And she said, one of them is physical touch. And I said, well, then next time you're together, touch him. She reported to me afterwards. She goes, you know what? I put my hand on his leg in the car when we were driving there. And later that night, he says to me, wow, honey, when you put your hand on my leg in the car, it really made me feel loved and supported through this. Isn't that amazing? Just one tiny little thing.
Yeah.
Because she was hitting the nail on the head of his love language.
It's what he needed from her, and it wasn't a big lift, so to speak, on her part.
Right. Brené Burchard was talking the other day. He goes, you know, we know what we need to do. He says, we know what we need to do to eat healthy or to exercise or, for instance, love our partners. We know what we need to do, but oftentimes we don't want to do it. So sometimes you just have to say, I'm going to love him in his love language for the next 5 days and see how it goes. When you feel disconnected, set your intention. Can I tell you a little story about it being intentional?
Yes. Love that.
I'll try to make it short because it could get a little long. But we used to live in this little tiny 850 square foot home. Coming into the house, the front door, there's a big glass window. My husband, he worked early. We'd get home mid-afternoon. And he's a plumber, so he was always, you know, dirty and tired. And he would get home, and I also had a couple home-based businesses. One had a lot of inventory. I was peddling scarves. So I had all these scarves, boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of scarves that I would pull out. I would price them. I'd have to put them away. So a lot of times when he'd get home in the middle of the afternoon, the living room was covered with all these scarves and all this inventory, this jewelry inventory, accessories that I was selling. And it would really irritate him because he just wanted to come home to a nice, neat house and be able to walk through the shower and get rid of his dirty clothes. So we were growing further and further apart. It was getting worse every night. Here I am in my living room feeling completely disconnected from my husband and thinking, I'm not going to have another divorce. What do I need to do? And I learned to be intentional. So the idea is that when you walk into, this is a Brené Burchard thing again, when you walk through a doorway, you should be intentional before you walk through what person you need to be on the other side of that door with the people in there. So I thought, well, he's walking through the doorway and I'm going to be intentional about our evenings. So I started by throwing a giant smile, a Cheshire Cat smile on my face, like waving. I mean, like literally ridiculous. So ridiculous. And the first day he walks in and he just looks at me like the weirdest look. And usually I'd be scrambling around, trying to put everything away and completely ignoring him when I get home. So I wanted to be intentional and set the tone for a great evening together. So I did it the second day again. He gave me that look like, what are you doing? The third day, he finally goes, okay, I need to know what is going on. And I told him that I was trying to be intentional, set it. Tension of having a great evening together. And the fourth day, he comes up to that glass window in our front door and he plasters his face, his nose and his lips up against that window and a big old Cheshire grin, like to me, back to me. And that has been one of our biggest tools in our tool chest. Just smiling at each other, greeting each other with positive energy. No matter what space I'm in, when he comes home from work, I'm like, hey, baby. I still do it. Now, we live in a much bigger house now, and he has his office, I have mine. But when he comes into my space, he comes in intentionally positive, and I try to do the same thing to him. And when you do that in your relationship, when you're very intentional, you can really turn things around. And it completely did for us. It absolutely revolutionized our marriage in a very short period of time. Being intentional with your positive energy. That's the way you were when you dated. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
When you first started dating, you couldn't wait to see the person. There's always a big smile on your face and you saw them, big hugs. All is like, yeah, I can't wait to see you. But as we go on, we start to take our partner for granted. And if you can stop doing that, if you can start being intentional again, start by smiling. Have a happy tone of your voice when you're speaking to your partner. It makes all the difference. It can make all the difference.
I bet. And I bet that you've got a list of your top three things. If someone's thinking their relationship's beyond repair, you've got three things that you can do to start improving things immediately. And I'm guessing that's one of those top three. What are the other two?
The hugs, for sure. More hugs, more connection. And the hugs are just like the first step. Hugs and touching and massages. I mean, sometimes you'll hear of couples, and I'm sure you probably know some couples that haven't had sex in years. That's what couples do even after menopause. That's not an excuse.
Yeah.
Just because we're getting older doesn't mean we shouldn't be intimate with our partners. Take a shower together, get out the massage oil, get a massage, you know, give each other massages, hugs, touching, all that good stuff, holding hands, all the things, kissing. Add in all those good things those intimacy building things and then work your way back up to sex, because sex is important. Mm. You know, intimacy, unless you have a physical reason that you're not able to, but you still can be intimate with your partner even if you can't physically have sex. There's still lots of ways to have intimacy in your relationship, whether it's a woman who, whatever she's got going on, that she can't have sex, or if it's a man that has, you know, ED or something, intimacy is still so important. Even if it doesn't involve sex, there's lots of ways to be intimate without sex.
So the hugs, the intention.
The third big relationship builder is remembering how to, like I said earlier, how to have those conversations. Good ones, the bad ones, and how to keep your emotion out of it. Because the more distant we get from our partners, we tend to give short answers. We don't talk much anymore. We're not asking those questions. We're not truly interested in what's going on in the other person's life. Because I come from a biblical background, I really take on the whole, you know, the golden rule thing, right? Do unto others as you'd have them do to you. So love first if you want to be loved. Serve first if you want to be served. Ask the questions first if you want to be spoken to. Start the conversations with a positive tone of voice instead of bitterness and anger and snippiness. We tend to be snippy and irritable, and those things, you have to get rid of that if you want to correct a relationship that's gone awry. That tone of voice.
Definitely tone, it sets the tone, right? That's is what it is. It's tone can do a lot of damage. It can also be very helpful, especially when starting anything. In your book, I noticed when I was looking through parts of your book, it looks like it's written toward women more specifically. Is that intentional? I know you coach women. Is that book for the women you coach?
Yes, I did write it specifically for women because, don't take me wrong, and I'm really generalizing here, but men can be fairly simple in the things that make them happy, hitting their needs. We talked about this before.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can keep his belly full, if you can have sex with him frequently, I mean, again, as we get older, things change. But if you can learn to show respect, respect is a little bit harder to learn. But when you can hit those three things, most men are fairly content and happy and will stay with their woman and be okay. But if you stop doing those things. And women are more complicated. We have all these expectations and we beat around the bush. We don't know how to be straightforward in the way we speak to people. And we tend to be derogatory and disrespectful. I fall into it as well. Just the other day, my husband looked at me and said, "Do you really mean that?" Like, oh, backpedaling. And we tend to be critical and we tend to be emotional and our voices tend to get out of control and we're like, what? So I speak to women because we're the ones that have the issues 90% of the time. And we're the ones who play the games. Oh, they'll withhold things. He owes me this. There's so many things in our society right now. And this is especially why I wrote it for my kids, because there's so much bad advice on social media and in our society on YouTube right now. So much bad advice about relationships. Women want to be queens, but they forget that they need a king. So I speak to that. Queen is inherently subservient. And I hate to put it this way, and I love all you women out there who are listening. Thank you so much. Please don't take this wrong. I've been a flight attendant for 35 years, and I like to equate a relationship to what happens in the cockpit of an airplane, or the flight deck, they call it now. So we have the captain, and you've got the first officer, and then you've got the flight attendants in the back. Now, the captain and the first officer both 100% know how to fly that plane on their own. If one person's not there, the other person can do it. The first officer does not need the captain to tell him what to do. And the captain does not need the first officer to tell him what to do. But they work together equally. They sit at the same spot. They each have different roles when they're flying the plane. And one person is inevitably in charge if there's an emergency. The captain will be in charge. He's in charge. He has the final say. From a biblical perspective, the husband in a relationship has the final say. Now, that is not to say that the woman does not have input. She has 100% ability to input. We are equals. We are equals. We're the captain and the first officer of our marriage. But if there's a tie, he wins. And that's okay to let him win, because then it's his responsibility if he makes a bad decision. But your responsibility is to lovingly give all the input that he needs to make the best decision. And 90% of the time, he will refer to you because he doesn't want to do the work to figure it out.
That's a good
life
hack right there. Yeah.
Don't take the submission thing like it's something bad. It's like the surgeon and then the physician's assistant who's in with the surgery and then the anesthesiologist. And then there's a hierarchy in a surgical ward. It's not that one's less important than the other. The anesthesiologist is just as important as a surgeon in a surgery.
Very much.
Absolutely just as critical. But he's going to take his direction from the surgeon. But he's also going to tell the surgeon, hey, this guy's waking up. We need to add. And the surgeon's going, yes, do that. My point is that even though we have different roles, it's okay that we're not always 100% on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women, they don't understand the equality that's there for them. And there's some men who will take advantage of that. Some men will say, well, I'm in charge. I'm the head of the house and you should listen to me and you have to do what I say. Well, that's unhealthy. That is not a healthy man. But a healthy relationship is where a man says, I so value your input and I would like more of it. I can't make a good decision without you. And that's a healthy relationship. And then you have the freedom to be able to say what you need in a loving and respectful way.
You work with women, so it sounds like this is something that might come up with women who are in either the early stages of a relationship or in those stages where maybe they're trying to find the relationship that's right for them. Maybe they've been out of a long-term relationship. They're trying to start over and get their bearings and figure out, okay, Teresa, help me figure out what went wrong here. Obviously, some things crashed and burned. Help me not make those same mistakes again. Is this one of the conversations you would have with one of those women who was looking for a really good, healthy relationship and maybe had not experienced it before?
Yes, because I think that a woman has a lot of ability to affect her positively or negatively affect her relationship. So a lot of what we do is internal. I can't help her make her husband do different things. I can just help her learn to love him in his love language. I can help her learn to show him respect and understand what disrespect looks like. I counsel a lot of women when you're in the middle of an argument and he says something that's really out of line, don't respond. You basically just shake your head, you look at him, and you walk away. You're like, nope, you just crossed the line there. But screaming back at him for saying something wrong that's inappropriate or belittling or whatever, all that does is make him think that you're just a raving bee instead of taking that self-control and stopping and pointing out, well, you just crossed the line, buddy. I'm not doing that. And there's different types of people in conflict. Some people want to go head-to-head. They're chasers. Like, we're going to talk about this. We're going to get this. It's like, and then it's fiery and then it's over.
Yeah.
Then there's another person that's like, oh, we're in conflict. Oh, no, I don't want to do this anymore. He runs away.
Must abort mission.
Yeah. Mission, I'm done. And then the other person could be a chaser and chase. Oh, I can't do that anymore. You know, or no, we're not gonna stop talking about this. We've got to figure out the answer. And this could be a woman or a man, either one. Either person can take on this role. Or there could be two runners. Like, there's conflict. Yeah. I don't want to talk about that. There's healthy things and unhealthy things to each side of those actions. Especially the runner-chaser scenario. The runner wants to run away and not talk about it. The chaser won't let go until it's resolved. And that's a scenario where you really need to work on having some ground rules for arguing ahead of an argument. You can't, in the middle of an argument, say, wait, how to walk you?
Let me pull out the sheet.
When you're happy. Yeah, you have to do that more when you're happy. The runner-chaser scenario can be really detrimental to a relationship unless you learn how to handle it. Handle it beforehand. Like, for instance, with the runner-chaser scenario, can't say, well, let's talk about it tomorrow. Because the runner is going to go, oh, I'm getting relaxed. It's all good. Tomorrow comes, and that didn't happen, right? That was like stupid. But the chaser is going to remember every little bit and get more angry and more angry. And you know you're a chaser if you're in an argument by text and the runner will ghost you and the chaser will send 50 messages unreplied to.
Right.
That's a runner chaser and a text message. You need to learn how to say, okay, I need a 15-minute break. If it gets too heated for me and I got to go time out, if I'm a runner and I'm like, time out, let's take that break. come back together in the promised 15 minutes. Because as the 15 minutes go by, the runner relaxes and feels better. They calm down. The chaser gets angrier and angrier.
Because it's unresolved.
So if you get that 15 minutes and come back together, then the ground rules, you have to set some boundaries for when you get back together. We won't raise our voices. We're going to talk about only the subject at hand and not subjects past or future. That's another ground rule. And third ground rule is no name calling. Another ground rule, respect. Showing the other person respect by listening, by being quiet, not talking over the other person. Those are some ground rules, but those are things you have to practice and you have to come up with ahead of time before the next argument that goes really bad.
Yeah. Well, speaking of arguments, I'm just curious, since you've been talking about this, it sprang into my mind. What's your opinion on the words always and never?
I don't like promises because they're inherently breakable.
I was thinking of it in the context of an argument, you always or you never, and fill in the blank with whatever that is.
Right. Those are obviously fallacies because a person doesn't always do anything. A person doesn't never do anything. There could be, I suppose it could be a slight, I don't know, you never plumb houses. My husband could say that to me and that would be a truism.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't plumb houses. But it would be unfair for me to say to him, you never help around the house, because he does help.
I guess in that vein, where do you delineate a complaint from taking it up a notch where, let's say you do have a difference of opinion and an argument's escalating from someone has an unmet need, so they have a complaint, and then it escalates, maybe the other person gets defensive, and that doesn't go well, it's starting to get to that back and forth point. Is that the time you say, okay, that's when you want to take that 15 minutes, or do you want to just everybody put a hand up and say, hey, let's reset, let's figure out what we're really talking about here? What would you say should happen when you do start having the difficult conversations and you haven't had those in a while, and maybe you've never really done that well, so it's starting to look clumsy, but you know it's important, so you want to do it right?
Talking about how to do it right or how to do it well, coming up with some ground rules together for the next conflict. It's a hard conversation to have, but it's an important one for a good relationship. Now, do my husband and I have ground rules? Not really. But we also, we're both kind of runners. So we let a lot of things go.
Yeah.
A lot of it recognized, like maybe that's just me being emotional in the moment and probably isn't a hill to die on.
Mm-hmm.
When conflict tends to be out of control and frequent in your relationship and makes you, every time you have it, you're like, I'm out, I'm done. That's something else I don't like people to say.
Yeah.
I do not like threats of divorce.
Mm.
No, 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 no.
Yeah.
If you want to have a long-term marriage, it's kind of like not allowing your children to say, I hate you. Not allowing your husband to say, fine, I'm just going to get a divorce. Mm-hmm. No, that's out of the boundaries. No, no, no. If we want to decide to get a divorce, okay. But threatening it all the time is just not okay.
Yeah.
That's a boundary for me anyway.
A complaint you can do something about. Criticism is just name calling. It's the, you always do this, you never do that. What's your advice to people if they do have a partner, spouse, who that's their go-to? Pull out the ace in the deck of cards and be done. Just everybody's emotional at that point, right?
That's when it gets really unfair. And that's where I advise the women that I coach. When the conversation in an argument becomes unfair, when words are being spewed, the you always, you never, you're a blah, blah, you know, name calling, that kind of thing. That's when I advise the women that I coach to stop. Just stop. Do not respond. Number one, don't be the person throwing the accusations. Don't do it. Because the things you say cannot be taken back. Once it leaves your mouth, it's in his ears. And some people, it's in his ears forever.
Hmm.
You have to have self-control. Now, I'll talk about self-control in a second. But you have to have that self-control to not be the one. But if your partner tends to do that because they have to win, so in order to win, they start playing unfair, that's when you stop and you say, I'm done. You stop the conversation or you just don't reply.
Hmm.
Zero words, zero emotion, no screaming, no shouting, no calling names in response. Be the bigger person. Be the adult in the room. Walk away. If you need to say something, you can say, that was unfair, that was untrue, and I'm done talking about this now.
Mm.
Or say nothing, because then the last thing that person, your partner, said is going to be spinning in his mind and not the last thing that you said. So sometimes it's more powerful to say nothing. Just shake your head. You can say, I'm done. I'm done with this conversation. We're done here, and walk away. Because he just crossed the line. And number one, we want to show respect, but we also want to receive respect. And allowing that to continue is not showing yourself respect.
That's a good point.
So I have a lot of things to talk about in terms of, from a biblical standpoint, again, there's a part in John, they look at like God is the vine and we are the branches that bear fruit, okay? If you think of that metaphor, God is the vine. He's where all the good stuff flows, right? In a grapevine, got all the water and the nutrients. And when the grapevine is healthy, it sends those nutrients through the branches. And then you have nice, big, plump, delicious grape, right? So that's the fruit. And the fruit of the Spirit, they talk about as a Christian or as a believer, or as anybody, it's love, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control, love, peace, patience, joy, all those good things. And the better our relationship is with God or with ourselves or whoever, whatever your spiritual point of view is, the better we are centered, the more fruit we have in our life. We have more joy, more peace, more patience, more self-control. I think that's one of the beautiful things about getting a little older. Here I am celebrating my 60th birthday very soon. Getting a little bit older, you have more of that fruit because you have the ability to learn to not engage negative behavior. And in a relationship, it's super important to not engage that negative behavior, those negative conversations. Just don't engage. Do not reply when they're being unfair because you're not showing yourself respect.
Right.
We have a lot of control in those arguments by just stopping and being the adult in the room.
I love how you describe the vine metaphor and the fruit and what the fruit actually is, the peace, the joy, the love. And that's a great segue for if you are talking with someone and they feel like they have a great relationship with their partner, and they've been with their partner for quite a while. And so maybe they've just hit that, I don't want to call it a rut, maybe it's a plateau. Maybe they find themselves going to the same places, doing the same thing, you know, thinking about the same vacations, because that's the rhythm they are used to. But everything else about the relationship is great. But maybe there's something a little deeper going on with this pattern. What advice would you give someone who just feels like they need to experience growth that they haven't experienced maybe in a while in their relationship?
I think it's okay to switch up your friend group sometimes, to switch up the other people in your life. You're not going to switch up your partner. For instance, my husband and I were just talking about our vacations for 2024 and what we're going to be doing. And we were invited to go to Rotan with some other friends that we don't usually vacation with. And we were also invited to go to Cabo with some people that we know quite well. And I said, maybe it would be good to switch up the group a little bit, get to know some new people, do something with other people that we don't normally spend time with. Because I think it's important that as we grow, like for instance, we're dry, we don't drink. And the new friend group, about 3/4 of those people are dry as well. The old friend group still drinks heavily and we love them, but we're changing ourselves. And so it's important you surround yourself with people that are on the same road you are. I mean, listen, we hung out with all those people on New Year's Eve. It was awesome. It was super fun. And they're people we love. We've known them for 15, 20 years, long time. But it's good to be around new people, to do new things, to do new things together. Go to dinner with a new coworker or somebody else from church or somebody else that you meet. We meet new people all the time. You actually pick up that phone and make that reservation, that dinner reservation with these new people and see maybe this is a relationship or friendship we want to cultivate together. Jeremy and I almost always do our date nights with another couple. We tend to have way more fun because we've already talked about it all ourselves.
Right. Yeah.
You know, date nights are important. Doing things outside of your house is important for your relationship. Super healthy. For us, we like doing it with other people. And sometimes we'll even say if we're going into a new situation, we went to an event and didn't really know anybody there. So before we walked in, we knew we weren't going to know many people there. So before we walked in, we looked at each other and made a pact. Let's be the funnest people in the room. before we walked through that doorway, we set our intention for the type of energy we wanted to bring with us. And by the end of the night, we had a whole bunch of new friends. So I think it's important to continue to do those new things. Try something new. For instance, Jeremy is getting back into something he used to do in college that he hasn't done for a very, very, very long time. And he's really excited about it. So I'm like, go for it. Do it. New people, new things, new sober experiences.
Yeah.
It's really healthy. And it's something that he's taking on because I'm the acts of service person, right? I'm always a busy doing person. So he's like, this is this thing that it's mine. I'm like, yeah, go. Because I initially was trying to assert myself. I initially said, well, that's been really fun. We should do that together. That'd be really great. He's like,
actually,
I want this to be my thing.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And I absolutely 100% support and respect that decision. And I'm like, yeah, go.
Yeah.
I'm a triathlete and I'm a musician. So I have all these other things that I do besides being a flight attendant and then all this online stuff that I have going on with my, I have a Facebook group, by the way, that's called Less Conflict, More Joy. Anybody's welcome to join. Just got to answer a couple questions and come on in. It's for women of faith who are wanting to improve their marriages. I also have a Facebook page called Joyfully Married. And that's more of like an advertising kind of, I can't really interact with people one-on-one. So Joyfully Married on Facebook or Less Conflict, More Joy on Facebook. Those are two groups that I'm in that is really a good way to connect with me.
Okay.
So I have all that going on too. So I have lots of things going on and he tends to not have as many things. He's an introverted extrovert or an extroverted introvert. So when he gets outside with other people, he's super friendly. But then when he much prefer just to be home.
Yeah. I get it. I do. I know that guy. I am that guy. We have that in common, at least. So I really appreciate this chat because I know I've found myself in situations like we've described here where everything's great. It just feels like it needs a little bit of growth. Then there are times where nothing's great and it feels like massive overhaul is what's going to do it. But it sounds like from what you've been talking about, setting intention and really understanding how the other person feels loved and receives love and get intentional about trying to do that for them. And of course, the communication is huge because you can't feel close to someone you can't communicate with.
Truly.
Well, Teresa, thank you so much for this conversation. And I really encourage people to go visit you at your website, joyfullymarried.com, and also check out your book. If anyone has any questions, I just looked over some of your info and I was like, oh yeah, I remember those concepts. And some of the things that you talk about are really practical. And like you said, easy to do within the day. If you just put them into practice, you could certainly see change. You just have to be thinking about it. And so often we get in our regular rotation of whatever habits we have, and we forget to do those little things for the other people that we really care about.
We do. And one other thing that if anyone would like to work on with me one-on-one or one-on-group, we'll do it that way, in a very reasonably priced manner, just come in the group, Less Conflict, More Joy. You can message me that way and I can get you information about the group coaching. And again, it's going to be quarterly. So it'll be the second month of every quarter.
I'll get that in the show notes. So if people want to hit the Facebook group, all of those things, they'll be able to access it right there from this episode's show notes and be really nice and easy for them to get to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me today. And if you have an extra minute, I have a favor to ask. Some of you listen to this show on Apple Podcasts. A lot of you I talk to are on Spotify or Amazon. And I'd love it if you take just a second to leave a rating or a review. It lets the platforms know that listeners are getting value from the show and will suggest it to others who are interested in similar content. And as always, if you have a topic you'd like me to cover, a guest suggestion, or just general feedback, I'd love to hear about it. Connect with me on Facebook, Instagram, or at joyfulrebellion.com.